Welcome to Pediatric Insight, where we have candid conversations with members of the Child Health Advisory Council and some of the nation's top academic child health leaders. I am Wesley Milliken, CEO of Career Physician, and your host. Each conversation addresses a leadership challenge or opportunity that's top of mind for today's pediatric leaders. The council breaks it down based on the wisdom and experience obtained throughout their distinguished careers. And now, I'm honored to turn it over to the moderator in today's conversation.
Hi, my name is Craig Hellemeyer, and along with my colleague Peggy Troy, we're going to be talking about the art of making a deal. As a leader in pediatrics, how do we make those things happen if we need to work with other people to make them happen? So thank you for joining us for today's Pediatric Insight. The council members in attendance today are Bob Swain, Ruder Stapleton, Valerio Papari, Danielle LaRocca-Arena, Wesley Milliken is the head of career physicians, Arnie Strauss, Peggy Troy will be my co-moderator, and we're glad that you can join us. So today's topic is making a deal, the art of making a deal. And our first question really relates to how do we move from deciding what we want to have happen in terms of putting together a package for a specific recruit towards working with other people to make that happen. And we thought perhaps maybe, Danielle, you can talk a little bit from your experience that you've had in putting together these sorts of packages.
Thank you. I did have to give some thought to this question because it certainly brought me back to my own recruitment when I was being recruited as a division chief, but also my role both as a chair and as a president. So I think it's interesting. Obviously, we've talked a lot in this series about how in the recruitment process, it's really important to understand pretty much all sides. Obviously, the person who's being recruited and the institution need to arrive at an engagement that makes all sides as possible happy in the arrangement, that it's fair, it's transparent, it is and allows for support and growth. So I think one is in the package to make sure you understand what the person who's being recruited has discussed in their recruitment. It includes compensation, it includes HR, it includes collaborations with other departments, and I'll come back to that theme. It includes academic requests in terms of and I'll be specific what I'm thinking about. And knowing that the recruitment, though, is, for example, if it's the division chief, is by the chair. So whatever arrangements have been made to put the package together, the commitment to that individual is from the leader of that department in good faith and arranges that. And of course, it needs to be in writing. And if there is proviso with respect to a contracted year, for example, is it a recruitment for 5 years, which is pretty typical for chairs? Is it recruitment at will? Again, we haven't talked a lot about that, but in the higher positions, often positions are at will. You are at the behest of the chancellor or the president. One is alignment, so that the recruitment package needs to be clear on what the aims are, the reason for the recruitment, and the support services, the resources that are going to be done. I would avoid tensions in saying things like, you know, in order to support you, I've had to pull in X, Y, or Z, because I have seen, and this is coming from personal experience, where somehow you are beholden to another department or another division for your support, even if you're not aware of those sort of collaborative agreements. Recruit with transparency, but if you're recruiting in good faith, then you then need to go through the commitments that have been made and probably not promise academic sort of, for example, endowed chairs. Is that included in the recruitment package? If it's not, leave it out, or, you know, we will explore. So really making sure that the communication is clear.
I want to go back to making this happen requires preparation. So as a chair or a division director, you have to realize, of course, that many recruitments involve these sort of interactive, collaborative arrangements. And the way to make sure that those work, in my view and in my experience, is by having the relationships established long before any individual recruit. And those relationships, not just including discussions, including trust. It's so critical that when you have this sort of arrangement, that not only is it written, yes, Danielle, but that people can trust that it will happen because they trust each other. And that's whether it's a chair of surgery the CEO of the hospital or potentially the dean. So developing those relationships for me was an early priority as a chair, so that I in the future knew that I could interact with people and make things happen. I think the second thing I would reiterate is the art of the deal has to be truthful. You have to follow up on your commitments. You can't make a deal and then renege on it, both for the candidate, the person you're recruiting, but also because of these relationships. Because once one of those relationships with, let's say, the chair of surgery are ruptured, it's a disaster for the next, your entire time together. So you have to fulfill your commitments. That seems to go without saying. But again, in my experience, it's unfortunately common that it doesn't happen. And I agree with Danielle. It's best if you don't have to rely too much on somebody else. Because you want to make sure that you have some control over the situation.
Arne, I really appreciate you emphasizing the point of trust. And I think that you find out if you've been able to live up to that trust the next time you go back to that individual entity or organization. And if you haven't lived up to the truthfulness of that previous interaction, they won't be very supportive in the future. I'll guarantee you that. Bob, I know as a sort of a individual who's dealt a lot in pediatric surgery and dealing with lots of other entities within the institution, you might have some interesting perspectives on putting together these type of deals.
Yeah, thanks, Craig. As you point out, it's often at children's hospitals, the surgeon in chief is not a department chair and may not have command and control over resources that a chair might have. So I think in that role and other roles, it becomes imperative that people that one has the ability to have that trusting relationship and that influence with others. It strikes me that beyond those roles, chairs and deans and everyone else now, resources being so constrained, that interaction with your colleagues and dependency on your colleagues is even more of an issue now. So it's all, I think the leadership skills that are required in the current environment might be a little bit different than those of 10 or 20 years ago, where sometimes people in roles of responsibility had a lot of autonomy and control of resources. Now we're even more dependent on others. So my department chair said to me at one point, he was asking about my take on multidisciplinary programs where it wasn't clear who had responsibility for that clinical program. I thought it was a problem. He actually, I think, taught me something that, this is the future of medicine, multidisciplinary, interdisciplinary, collaborative relationships, and that the most effective leaders are going to be those that are effective influencers. It's no longer going to be you're doing it because the chair said or because the dean said. You're doing it because of the collective interests of the institution, and you have to be very effective at interfacing with other people. The other thought I had in terms of specifics and offers and so forth, I think linking mileposts. So for example, development of a new clinical program, committing resources up front, and yet then having clear mileposts along the way that will then entitle the leader to additional resources so that there's some clarity there. It's not just a grand vision, but there's some specificity and a marching plan, if you will, that everybody can agree upon.
So Peggy, you're gonna take over the next section here, which is gonna talk about how to sort of, as a leader of a children's hospital in the past, how one can go about trying to take advantage of other factors in terms of making these deals happen. So,
yeah, so we've talked a lot about the internal dynamics between the institution and the hospital and the academic environment, but there's also oftentimes requests that come up for some non-traditional sources that we have to look outside the institution so that we can make sure that as the recruits are coming to our organizations, our communities, that all their needs are met. And I've had several in the past that have required different companies, different organizations, churches, et cetera, in order to put together the full package. And so I'd like to hear from Valerie first. Valerie, you've had a lot of recruitment experience. So what are some of the non-traditional sources you've had to engage in order to successfully recruit a candidate?
I think I'll start by just emphasizing the very important points from the previous question about relationships. When you take on a role as a division chief or a chair or a dean, especially if you're from another institution where you don't know people, you have to think very broad and wide about making relationships at the university level, at the hospital level, in the community. You have to have a presence. So, you know, when I was chair, I made it a point to attend events and activities that were kind of peripheral to the department, but they were part of the community, because those relationships, those people that you meet in those kind of social settings, can be instrumental when you have a specific recruitment with a spouse or a child that has some special needs, and you're in a position to know what's available in the community. I also want to mention that in addition to those relationships, getting them established, remember when you're approached by someone about helping them with something, whether that's a monetary investment or that's making a connection, every time you do that kind of activity, even when there's nothing that you directly benefit from, it reinforces your reputation and the view that people have about you as being an honest broker and someone who's committed beyond their own personal interests. And the next comment I would make is, and it'll be a little bit different from Danielle's, there's something to be said for having skin in the game. So for instance, when someone comes to you and they tell you about a recruitment that you could give them some monetary help for, even though you're not completely, you know, you can sort of peripherally see the alignment, putting some skin in the game and helping that effort to be successful, again, reinforces the kind of person you are and what you represent. And you never know when you'll be needing to do a request of that individual down the road. So you're building goodwill capital for the future. The next thing I would say is, again, part of those relationships, you know, let's say your chair of surgery has a recruitment that's only peripherally maybe of significance to you, but they tell you about it and you realize all chairs are working with their deans to compete for the same bucket of resources, right? I mean, there's only so many resources each year that can be invested in various recruitments. But if this is really a critical institutional recruitment, as you were mentioning, Peggy, you going with that chair to the dean and saying, look, this is only peripherally important to me, but I can see the benefit to the institution. And I want you to know that I'm behind this investment 100%. Again, that's building tremendous goodwill. So, you know, I've had many experiences where I've been able to get resources from the provost at the university, from directors of the botanical gardens in a unit that's outside, very much outside what I'm doing, even very accomplished coaches for swimmers that are in high schools, where I'm trying to make the point that we're recruiting a family that has a real star swimmer, and would you meet with this family and talk to them about what's available in the community and so on and so forth. So again, it really gets back to what, you know, Arnie said initially about relationships and building that goodwill. And I guess the last thing I would say is, you know, timing is everything. And as Danielle said, really understanding all the constraints for a candidate when you're trying to put the package together, not just the candidate's constraints, vision, strategy for the division or department, but what the spousal issues are, or the significant other's issues are, or the children's issues are, really making sure you have a deep understanding of what it's going to take to bring a package together. And it's not just what's in the written contractual package of the candidate, it's the other package that's external to that, that you have to oftentimes build in order to secure recruitment. And so timing is everything. If you only learn about these things at the ninth hour and you don't have the time to put in that goodwill series of calls, then you may very well lose a candidate that you otherwise would not have if you had had the time to really invest in putting that in-package thing together and that external package thing together.
Valerie, those are excellent points, and I agree with you. Proactive engagement really does help, because some of these other external sources you need to work with to attract the candidate are very, very necessary. And Arnie brought up the concept of follow-up. Again, you're not done once the recruit lands in your organization. It's incredibly important that you continue to follow along to make sure that all the promises within that package are coming to fruition. It's a lot, and that impacts the reputation of your organization, because then they're going to talk to others to say, no, you can believe what they say. This is really, the trust is there, and it's an organization you should want to join. Bruce, you've had so much experience in this area. Why don't you talk to us a little bit about some of the non-traditional sources you've had to accomplish during the recruitment?
Thank you. The comments so far have been outstanding and have covered a lot of ground, but I would like to give just a couple of vignettes. Part of this really means truly understanding the candidate and what her needs might be, so that you can see if that would fit in with your resources. We had a candidate that was very entrepreneurial, and the ability to meet with our startup for companies to find out what resources are available for startups and seed funding really made a big difference in the recruitment. The other thing not to overlook is potential government sources. And I don't mean federal government, but the state government. Two examples of this. When I came to Richmond almost 20 years ago, there was already a program established called Virginia Eminent Scholars, with funding set aside that was time limited, that were recommended through the dean after appropriate vetting. And these funds could be used as additional startup funds for research program. But even more exciting, more interesting, is something that Terry Stoll did many years ago when he first took the chair in Oklahoma. He worked with the state government, the Oklahoma state government, as well as foundation, to set aside funding to develop endowed chairs. And over the years, developed more than two dozen endowed chairs from this that were used for recruitment. I still recall the chair of neonatology was the Reba McEntire chair. So it was a very clever way of leveraging resources in advance of needing them. But the other point, what are the needs of the individual? Professional development, for example, is a big opportunity for a resource that you can give, laying out precisely not just the mentorship, but other things that will be used to help develop that person professionally. And also very important, particularly these days, is work-life balance. So is it possible for recruitment to look at flexible work arrangements, recruiting perhaps two persons where in the past you would only look at recruiting one person for a position, or recruiting for a part-time position when you can't fill a full-time position, but still having many of those needs met?
Well, thank you very much. I've had a lot of really great comments, and I think at the end of the day, you know, relationships and trust are really what it's all about. Thank you very much for your attention today.
Thank you for joining us for today's discussion. The Child Health Advisory Council is comprised of a diverse group of emeritus deans, department chairs, division chiefs, and child health executives recognized for their leadership contributions in academic pediatrics and child health. The CHAC's impact is further bolstered by council specialty advisors who are active current national leaders in each of the subspecialties in pediatrics. Collectively, the 30-plus members of the CHAC bring unmatched wisdom and experience to career physicians' executive search and leadership development endeavors for its clients. If you have a question for our council or have a future topic suggestion, please connect with us at pediatricinsight.com.